The story of the man named both Jacob and Israel is linked to the struggles Jacob has with Esau's angel and with himself. It thereby represents for us two struggles of Jewish history, the physical encounter with our enemies and the Jewish struggle within ourselves to remain true to our covenantal calling. Welcome to Parsha and Politics, Episode 8, Vayishlach, Jacob's Struggle, a Mystery of Art History and a Message for Our Moment. I'm Meir Soloveitchik.
Welcome to Parsha and Politics, How Torah Changed the World. This series is brought to you by MeirSoloveitchik.com, a project of Tikva. If you'd like to learn more with Rabbi Soloveitchik, we invite you to subscribe at MeirSoloveitchik.com. This week's episode is generously sponsored by Juan Mesa Friedel.
Let us speak of one of the fascinating Jacobs of Jewish history, one little known today, one whose name, for much of his life, was not Jacob. Duarte Núñez da Costa lived in Portugal at the turn of the 17th century as a descendant of a converso family and a secret Jew. A valued minister to the king, he decided to flee to Amsterdam, escape the Inquisition, and start life anew, openly embracing the faith of his fathers. He took on a traditional Jewish name and became Jacob Yaakov Curiel. In Amsterdam and then Hamburg, Jacob Curiel raised two children, including his oldest, Moses, who became one of the leaders of Dutch Jewry. Amazingly, this very family that had preserved its Jewish identity under the nose of the royal house of Portugal proved so invaluable to the king that it continued to work on behalf of the monarch, only on its own terms. As the Jewish Virtual Library describes, quote, Jacob Curiel, alias Duarte Núñez da Costa, born a Murano in Lisbon, moved via Pisa and Florence to Amsterdam, later to Hamburg. Having made himself useful to members of the Royal House of Portugal in Hamburg, he was made Portuguese diplomatic representative. His elder son, Moses Jeronimo Núñez da Costa, died 1697, was Portuguese agent in Amsterdam, where he was prominent in the Sephardi community and represented his co-religionists in cases before the Dutch authorities. End quote. It is an amazing story. A man who had lived much of his life as Duarte embraces life as Jacob and raises a son named Moses. Both Jacob and Moses were Jewish leaders in their respective communities, and both continued to represent the Portuguese court, even after they had abandoned the country and embraced their covenantal calling. As the historian Stephen Nadler notes, the Curiels were also patrons of the arts, especially of the Dutch artist Romain de Hoogh, a source of so many Jewish scenes from 17th century Amsterdam. One such scene depicts a circumcision in a family home. Given who paid the bills for de Hoogh, it is possible that what we are looking at is a celebration of the Curiel family, so that the grandfather holding the baby would be Jacob Curiel. Of this we cannot be certain, but we do know that Jacob Curiel and his ancestors experienced, throughout the generations, two sorts of struggles as secret Jews. A struggle against the physical terror of expulsion and the auto-da-fé, and a struggle against the natural temptation to give in, to engage in utter assimilation. We bear this in mind as we read of the struggles of the original Jacob, whose engagement with Esau has always been taken as a template for the Jewish engagement with the Gentile world. As our reading begins, Jacob, heading home, hears that his brother Esau, who has sworn vengeance, is heading his way with a band of 400 men. Vayira Yaakov ma'od vayitzer lo. And Jacob feared greatly and was pained. Overcome with fright, Jacob engaged in prayer. Hatzileni na miyad achi miyad Esav. Save me, please, from the hand of my brother, from the hand of Esau, for I fear him greatly, lest he come and strike me, mothers and children alike. Note the seeming redundancy here. Save me from my brother, and then Jacob adds, from Esau. God, of course, knows who Esau is. He knows who Jacob's brother is. Why both save me from Esau and save me from my brother? One of the most famous homiletical interpretations of my great-great-great-grandfather, Rabbi Yosef Dov Soloveitchik, is a parsing of the verse. The repetition, he homiletically suggested, represents two different dangers, that of Esau and that of my brother. Throughout the centuries, Jews have been endangered by Esau's, by those who, like Esau of old, sought to kill the descendants, the family of Jacob. It is far preferable, of course, to have the non-Jewish world stretch out a hand in brotherhood. We want that. We welcome it. But there is nevertheless a danger to Jewish identity that is embodied in the phrase, my brother. This hints to the possibility of assimilation in a brotherly embrace offered by the world. The hard truth is that Jews themselves have often desired to slip the fetters of identity and the struggles that come with it. Or, as Rabbi Jonathan Sacks put it, quote, Jews have often wished to be someone else, the Esaus of the age. Too often they knew what it was, in Shakespeare's words, to look upon myself and curse my fate, wishing me like to one more rich in hope, featured like him with friends possessed, desiring this man's art and that man's scope, with what I most enjoy contented least. End quote. In other words, not only persecution, but also attempted assimilation can be found throughout Jewish history. We bear this in mind as we consider how Jacob is the patriarch who spent much of his life in exile. The unfolding of Jacob's story has therefore embodied, for Jewish tradition, the interaction of Jews with the non-Jewish world. This is especially true of the scene in the parasha that comes next. After assisting his family in crossing a river, Jacob suddenly encounters a mysterious individual with whom he wrestles in the dark. Vayivater Yaakov levado, and Jacob remained alone. Vayavik ish imo, and a man wrestled with him until the break of dawn. Who is this ethereal individual with whom Jacob struggles? One common interpretation is that it is an angelic embodiment of Esau, one whom Jacob must physically face before making peace with his brother. According to this understanding, the battle throughout the night with an angel portends the many dark struggles against our enemies throughout Jewish history. Indeed, later in the reading, following the story of the horrific assault on Leah's daughter Dinah, which we will discuss next week, the Torah portion concludes with a long listing of Esau's descendants. It may seem utterly uninteresting until we notice one name. The passage reads, "These are the names of Esau's sons, Eliphaz, the son of Adam, the son of Esau, Reuel, the son of Basmat, the wife of Esau," and the verse adds, "and Timnah was a concubine of Eliphaz, the son of Esau, and she bore Amalek to Eliphaz." Amalek, of course, will become the great enemy of Israel and the embodiment of Jew hate throughout the centuries. Thus, the struggle throughout the night can be read as a struggle with a representative of Esau, predicting future terrible struggles yet to come. But another possibility is that the mysterious man with whom Jacob struggles is himself. The wrestling match, in other words, takes place within Jacob. He needs to overcome the fear within, to muster the courage, to embrace his identity in full, to face all that Providence has set in store for him. Strikingly, in Rembrandt's depiction of Jacob's nighttime struggle, he gives us a Jacob with his eyes closed, as if the struggle is internal. Is the struggle internal or external? Both interpretations can be true. For upon emerging victorious, a new name is bestowed upon the patriarch, Yisrael, or Israel, which is rooted in the word Sarita, you have struggled. Jacob is told, you have struggled with spiritual beings and with man, and you have prevailed. The struggle with the spiritual being is obviously the angel, but who is the human being with whom Jacob wrestled? This may be a reference to Jacob's scheming father-in-law Laban, but perhaps the man with whom Jacob struggled is Jacob, with his own emotions, his own fears. After this mysterious nighttime encounter, Jacob strides forth in the morning to meet his brother, who is himself overcome with emotion. And Esau ran toward him and embraced him and fell on his neck, and they kissed and wept. There are rabbis that interpret Esau's embrace as insincere, but others argue the opposite, that at this moment, Esau was suddenly overcome by the sight of his long-lost brother.
I hope you're enjoying this exploration of the Parsha's political wisdom. You can continue learning with Rabbi Soloveitchik at meirsoloveitchik.com, where you'll find a growing Torah library of online video courses, essays, and his two daily podcasts, Bible 365, a year-long study of the entire Tanakh, and Jerusalem 365, which explores the 4,000-year history of the Jewish people's eternal capital in a single year.
For Rabbi Naftali Tzvi Yehuda Berlin, the encounter with Esau portends a time when non-Jews will embrace the Jewish people out of a sense of fellowship, out of reverence for our Judaism, without asking us to give up our covenantal identity. Then, Rabbi Berlin writes, that embrace will be returned, as Jacob embraced his brother. Understood this way, the encounter with Esau embodies both future anti-Semitism and also the potential for philo-Semitism, which we have experienced in America from so many biblically inspired Americans. One thinks, for example, of a remarkable description by the Archbishop of Philadelphia, Charles Chaput, of his visit to Yeshiva University's study hall, encountering hundreds of students studying the Talmud. Archbishop Chaput wrote, quote, "I saw in the lives of those Jewish students the incredible durability of God's promises and God's word. Despite centuries of persecution, exile, dispersion, and even apostasy, the Jewish people continue to exist because their covenant with God is alive and permanent. God's word is the organizing principle of their identity. It's the foundation and glue of their relationship with one another. with their past and with their future. And the more faithful they are to God's word, the more certain they can be of their survival. End quote. Jacob's nighttime struggle reminds us that Jews have courageously struggled to resist persecution and assimilation, and we have continued to hope for moments when, embraced by the non-Jewish world, we return that brotherly embrace. The painting of Jacob by Rembrandt, reflecting struggles external and internal, within and without, is thus a portrait for our age. The story of the man named both Jacob and Israel is linked to the struggles Jacob has with Esau's angel and with himself. It thereby represents for us two struggles of Jewish history, the physical encounter with our enemies and the Jewish struggle within ourselves to remain true to our covenantal calling. Rembrandt's remarkably original way of portraying this story inspires us to ponder the provenance of this painting, to ask for whom exactly he might have made this masterpiece. Here I engage in what I admit is utter speculation, a guess, but I hope an educated one. After all, when I admitted to an art historian that what I think about this is speculation, he retorted to me that much of art history is utter speculation. Rembrandt's painting of Jacob, like Jacob himself, has a twin of sorts, another biblical Rembrandt produced immediately after this one. It is one of the most famous of the artist's biblical scenes, Moses descending Mount Sinai, clutching the tablets of the Torah in his hands. The two paintings are joined not only in chronology but also in style. Many have noted the rough, earthy, brown nature of both depictions. Today, they hang across the room from each other in Berlin. Gary Schwartz, the Rembrandt scholar, has written that these two paintings are clearly somehow linked. Meanwhile, the Moses painting is linked to another artistic creation, the Ark created for the Sephardic synagogue in Amsterdam. As the Israeli art historian Shlomo Sabar noted, the tablets atop the Ark are similar to those of Rembrandt. This Ark, as Stephen Nadler tells us, was funded by none other than Moses Curiel, son of Jacob Curiel. To summarize, the Jacob painting is mysteriously linked to the Moses painting, created at the same time, and the Moses painting is linked to the Ark in Amsterdam. Does it not make sense to suggest that both of these paintings, of both Jacob and Moses, might have been commissioned by Moses Curiel himself, a patron of the arts in Rembrandt's Amsterdam? What better way to memorialize, to celebrate his family's own triumphant encounter with the Gentile world and its emergence as a symbol of Torah living than these two paintings? In celebrating his own role as a Jew, we have Moses bearing the Torah before Israel. In honoring his father Jacob, Jacob Curiel, who escaped the Inquisition, we have the original Jacob's battle with the angel, taken by many to be an embodiment of Esau. For the Sephardic scholar known as Nachmanides, the nighttime struggle of Jacob and his emergence at dawn, wounded but triumphant, embodies Jewish history itself. Nachmanides writes, quote, "The whole matter represents an allusion to our future history, that there would come a time when the descendants of Esau would overcome Jacob almost to the point of total destruction. But," Nachmanides adds, "we endured all and it passed us by." End quote. We now could see why a man like Moses Curiel would have celebrated his father by commissioning from Rembrandt a painting of Jacob engaging with the angel. Because for Jews such as his father, to see such an image was to see a struggle that continued long after the original Esau, a struggle undergone by his father, Jacob Curiel, in Catholic Portugal, a struggle his father overcame. The painting speaks to a struggle that was also internal, that took place not only within Jacob, but within the Jew of the future. A struggle against the fear of our enemies and against the temptation to assimilate, to abandon the faith of our fathers. Is it not the perfect painting with which to remember Jacob Curiel? The story of the Curiel family speaks to all of us, for in every age we encounter Esau, we have our own engagement of the non-Jewish world. For some Jews, the danger has been persecution. For others, especially many today, the danger is the temptation to assimilate and lose our identity. The striking fact of our current moment is that the two struggles have become intertwined. In Israel, our brethren are physically engaged with an enemy that has, to paraphrase Jacob, attacked mothers and children alike. In this battle, Israelis have, like Jacob, revealed themselves to be truly Israel, truly capable, morally and physically, of engaging in this struggle against the enemy. But another struggle has begun in the diaspora, a wrestling by many Jews with their identity, the sudden rediscovery of some descendants of Jacob, of their covenantal calling. One example is given by a Chabad rabbi who attended the rally in Washington and recounted online an encounter on the metro. Rabbi Avram Berkowitz wrote, "We met Rob on the metro to the March for Israel rally. Rob told us he never had a bar mitzvah or put on tefillin in his life. He told us that his grandfather left him a pair of tefillin that he wore, but it got lost and he never put them on. Rob told us with tears in his eyes how happy he was to do this mitzvah and have his bar mitzvah now on the train to March for Israel, and specifically for the miraculous return of the hostages." End quote. dusted one elderly Jewish man, so many decades after he ought to have had a bar mitzvah, embrace the faith of his fathers, overcome with emotion, emerging victorious in a struggle over his identity, inspired by the genuine physical struggles of his brethren overseas. The story of Jacob has thus been seen throughout history as a tale of the Jews' encounter with the world. That is how Moses Curiel and Jacob Curiel would have seen it, and we, with our own challenges, should see it that way as well. These faithful art connoisseurs of Amsterdam were part of the larger culture, served in the courts of kings, but with the courage of those who resisted assimilation, overcame the Inquisition, and built a proud Jewish life in freedom. Today, another battle with Amalek is engaged, and the Jewish people finds itself in the dark night of struggle, like Jacob of yore, who battled till dawn. We yearn for the bright light of victory in the Holy Land, and we also long in the diaspora for a new dawning of a radiant embrace of Jewish identity. This is Meir Soloveitchik, looking forward to learning together next week. Wishing you a Shabbat Shalom. Signing off.